Board of Equalization of November 1st, 2018, test. Franklin County Board of Equalization, November 1st, 2018, it is 9:01. The first petition to be heard is BE 2018-24, parcel 1142-92141, owners Perry and Carolyn Hobson. The appellants are not present at this time. We have Brian Moneymaker, who is the appraiser representing the assessor's office. This hearing is scheduled to last for 20 minutes. We will go ahead and begin, and possibly if the appellant shows up afterwards, then we may need to restart a little bit. So, Linda Mays.
Sure. Welcome to the Franklin Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joel Christ, and me, Linda Mays, as chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Brian, who will be testifying today for the assessor's office, do you affirm that the testimony that you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to the taxpayer, which they should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided and the assessor by the taxpayer and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. Since the appellant is not present to present their case, then the assessor will now present his case. So please begin with your presentation.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate you all being here. I basically just want to start off by just saying that if you go to page 14, the statistical summary report, this is really what this is going to boil down to is this current sales. And for that area, which is the Clark's Edition, and also called Cow Trail, those two. Are you guys familiar with that area, Clark's Edition? That's off of Clark Road. It's down the road from Douglas Fruit. But there's two different little developments, ranchettes, if you will, and they have a mix of both stick-built homes and manufactured homes.
So this is northeast.
Northeast of town.
Just
northeast of town.
Yeah.
They have a mix of everything, and so we put that into one neighborhood because they're just similar, both little areas, but they're different from everything else. So we kept that. It was one neighborhood, and for that neighborhood, we came in at 96.35% on our ratio. And because everything in there, since it's a mix of everything, we included double wides or manufactured homes as well as stick built. Mm-hmm. With this tight supply market, it seems that when something comes up, it gets sold, and I want to kind of bring out one sale in particular that really kind of shows kind of shows where stick builds are, even in this neighborhood. If you look at, it would be the, I guess it's on page 15, it would be the fifth sale down, 3709 Janet Road, sold in December 5th of 2016 for $310,000. That one just resold. If this tells you anything, that's, so it sells in 2016, late 2016. It just sold in September, last month, and it's, or 2 months ago now. It sold for $349,000.
Yikes.
$349,900 is what it sold for.
Okay.
So that is almost a 13% increase within 22 months at an average of a little over 0.5% per month. So,
and do we know when that house was built?
It was built in 2015.
Okay.
But
oh yeah, right there, sorry.
But the basically it's irregardless of whether it's new or old, when you're in this tight supply, everything is going. You know, if somebody can get their hands on a house and it's with, and it's in their price range, especially stuff in that now we're up to $325,000-$350,000 and less range, they're going. And well, and here, the first sale that we have listed is a 1974 double wide, sold for $317,000.
Yeah.
And it's literally a quarter of a mile from the subject, right there. So, you know, but it's that kind of appreciation that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And because the appellant did say in his petition,
yeah,
that he didn't approve of the increase. Well, and unfortunately, we got to go off of what the sales are. And this latest sale proves that we are in this increasing market. And if you look at our overall ratio, we're at 96% overall for that neighborhood. So we're well within tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Brian, I noticed that he was appraised in 2015.
Yes.
272.
Correct.
Yeah.
And even, you know, it's kind of surprising to me because this is a 42-year-old house?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would think that would lower, what's the depreciation on this?
Well,
it's 12% depreciation. I would think that's kind of low for that old of a house.
What would be low?
12% depreciation?
No, that was 12% appreciation.
Oh, appreciation?
Yes.
Well, what's the depreciation on this house then?
We're not looking at it according to how much depreciation. We're looking at it as its market value.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is, it's a 42-year-old house. That,
yes.
That's old. That's,
yes.
I'm getting up there in age.
I understand what you're saying, but you know, if you look at the double wide I was just telling you about, a 1974 double wide sells for $317,000, and it only had two or four acres more than the subject. So, you know, and most of these don't have much water. I mean, most of these lots, they don't have any water. They don't have any irrigation water. They're all built off of wells. But, you know, regardless of the age is what we're seeing. Let me look at my other. I got a 2009 home that sold for $230,000. It's much smaller. Plus, here's the other thing about the subject. The subject also has a very large shop. in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, two of them. Has a large shop and a large utility building. It has a pool. It has a pool, and compared to its neighbors, as far as the condition, if you want to just look at it as far as depreciation, it's above its neighbors as far as condition, which would, if there's going to be any mention of depreciation, he has taken very good care of it. He hasn't really upgraded it per se, just new flooring and a new kitchen, which is significant as far as marketability. A lot of the older homes out there, I think because people are seeing this tight market and the appreciation, the older homes, people are starting to, people are starting to put some money into them just to, because they can get almost $300,000.
So is there a lack of housing out there?
Big time. I don't know if there's any. I don't even know how many listings are out there at this time. I would say very few, and there's probably 300 or 400 homes in that between those two, between Caltrail and Clark's Edition.
So are these two subdivisions built out?
I think with a few less available in Caltrail, and there's maybe I'd say 5 or 6, maybe 10 at the most in Clark's.
Okay. So we're percentage wise, I know. Kind of a guess on your part?
I would say it's probably 97%.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
95-97%.
Okay.
Yeah. Not that many are, right. Lots are available.
So was this rise in his value, was this a lot, was this based on this his outbuildings, like his shop? I mean, did that enter into raising this up so $70,000?
No. It was the reason for the increase over 3 years, $70,000 increase over 3 years, is because of the market is what's driven that value up. Not just his outbuildings. What we have seen in other not to mention this neighborhood, but pretty much across the county, if you've got outbuildings, a shop, a utility building, anything like that, we're seeing no decrease because you have that. If anything, it's adding value to your property because people need places to store their junk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
or they need a really nice man cave.
So, with regard to this area, was this area given a more in-depth look this year?
No. If you want to look at it, it's every year. We have to with this
now.
With this market, we really have to really dive into these sales, and which we do every month. We go through all the sales. Every single one of us appraisers will dive into every single sale.
Okay.
Just to I do all the rural stuff.
Okay.
So I go out and take a look at them and see, okay, why, where's this number coming from? And it still amazes me where we're at.
Okay.
I mean, we just had, here's an example. Just had a sale in a similar neighborhood out off of the PK Highway, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Very similar neighborhood than this one. Distance-wise, everything's similar, okay? Single wide mobile home, 1980, I think is when it was built. Single wide mobile home, not in the best condition, no water, 5 acres, except for a well, no irrigation water, 140,000, 980, and the land isn't worth that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people are clamoring for a place to live that they can afford right now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So the only thing that I, that really, I guess the other thing that caught my attention is he did provide a bit information regarding the refi, refinance appraisal that was done.
Yeah.
Came in at 272. Last year's assessed value is about 230. That was in 2016. He did his appraisal in 2015, so last year's appraisal was at 239.
Yeah.
So seeing 299 doesn't necessarily surprise me.
Right.
So for the last few years, he's had below market.
And that goes to show what this market is appreciating.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Even we try to keep up.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know. We just had a 1980 double wide on 5 acres out off of Elm Road, I think it was, $300,000.
Huh.
So.
Okay. Right. Any more questions?
Nope.
Okay. Nope.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good afternoon.
You
well,
too.
I'll see you again in here a little bit.
Okay.
petition VE 2018-25, parcel number 11859270, owners Joseph and Heather Alexander. Joe Alexander is present, and we also have Finney Ho and Nikki Morgan from the assessor's office. What we will do then, Linda, we will pass it over to you, just so you are aware, the petition is scheduled for 20 minutes, and you will have the appellant, you will have 5 minutes to present the highlights. Again, the board has reviewed your evidence, and then the assessor's office will have 5 minutes to cover their evidence. And in the last 10 minutes, what we will do is we will use that for rebuttal and questions. Okay. All right.
Good morning, Mr. Alexander.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joe Christ, and me as chairman, Linda Mays. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following
this hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. You will present your case first, and then the assessor will present his, or her, actually her, their case. Please begin with your presentation, Mr. Alexander.
Yes, I just want to thank you guys for your time. From what I understand, you guys are volunteers, so I appreciate this opportunity. The reason why I'm here is I don't agree with the county's assessed value of our property. I spent a little bit of time preparing for this, and what I did is went online. I was looking at I was just looking at properties that have sold recently compared to the assessed values that the county assigned. And if you look in the documents I provided, A through E, in each one of those, the properties were actually valued higher by the county than they actually sold, which I thought was interesting. And I wasn't digging very hard to find that. I spent maybe an hour of my time. I don't have a lot of time to devote to this. And I was surprised that of the maybe two dozen examples I looked at, five of them were overpriced by the county. So I understand that they're presumed to be correct, but I just wanted to show this, that they're not always correct. With regard to our specific property, it's a unique property. We purchased it about 2.5 years ago. We paid $263,000 for it. And at that time, the bank appraised it, and it appraised right at $263,000. So it's not like we had instant equity or we were getting a bargain price. So we paid $263,000 for it 2.5 years ago. And now the county is assessing it at $311,000 and some odd change. So that's quite an increase from what we paid 2.5 years ago. I understand the market is climbing, but that seems quite excessive to me. One thing I don't understand is it took approximately 10 years in the real world for our house to appreciate $60,000, because the original purchasers bought the house in 2006. They paid $203,000 for it. We purchased it 2.5 years ago. We paid $263,000. So in the real world, it took 10 years to appreciate $60,000. And now the county, in 2.5 years, has appreciated our house, the assessed value of it, $60,000 or more, from $263,000 on to the $311,000. It just seems excessive to me. This is not the first property we've ever owned. I've owned property in Whatcom County and Benton County, and it seems like those counties appraise value or assess values of property quite differently from the way Franklin County does. And I just don't feel they're being fair to the property owners in this county, and specifically our family. My original property that I owned in Whatcom County, I sold for $265,000 10 years ago. It's probably worth double that today, $500,000 up in Bellingham. And today it still is assessed by the county there for $200,000, less than I sold it for 10 years ago. A property that was sold in Benton County 1 year ago, we sold for $200,000. Today it's assessed by Benton County for $160,000. So to me, it just seems like, I understand it's probably irrelevant, but Franklin County is operating under the exact same rules and the same authority as all the other counties. I don't understand why they operate so differently than Whatcom County and Benton County. That's just my own experience. But with respect to our own property, it is a unique property. The appraiser for the bank, when we purchased it, he had a difficult time finding identical or similar properties, in fact, yet. And I'm not sure if I included that statement with your information, but in there he speaks to that fact that it was difficult to appraise because it's a split-level home that was built in 2006. There's not very many of them. It's an old-style home that was built fairly recently. So it's a unique property. Mm-hmm. It's got a number of factors that I feel should warrant a decrease in the value. The fact that it's a split-level home, most buyers today aren't looking for that style home. The major thing for me is that it's back up to Road 68. I included in the packet a study that was done, and I believe that was completed a couple of years ago, and at that time, on an average weekday, there was 8,500 vehicles traveling past that stretch of Road 68. So we have 8,500 cars going past our back property on a daily basis. And that's something you have to factor in when you're valuing a home, and I don't believe the county has done that. And if I went to sell that today, that definitely would be taken into consideration by potential buyers. There's a lot of people that do not want to deal with the traffic, with the hazard, because when we're out in our backyard, I'm concerned about a vehicle losing control and driving through our back fence right in my backyard. So I have to be careful with our daughter. I don't want her hanging out too close to that fence because the potential is there. The vehicle could come into our backyard. But anyways, we're dealing with the road noise, the sirens, the music, the vehicles. I believe that should warrant a negative value in our property. Also, I included some estimates. It's approaching 15 years old. Systems are starting to break down. The siding is getting brittle. It's failing in many parts or areas of the home. It's vinyl, so it's not like you can just go replace certain panels. It pretty much all has to be replaced. The estimate for that was $15,000. The driveway is in poor condition. That's another $5,000. The HVAC system is aging. That is likely going to need to be replaced in the near future. That's another $10,000. All that would have to be taken into consideration if we're going to sell the home. And most buyers would, you know, try to argue a lower price because of that. The photos of the shop, I just wanted to include because we have a full building, but there is no power to it. There is no lights. You'll notice in there's no electrical outlets. It's a bare building. So what I propose we do here, what would be acceptable to me, what I don't understand is why our property is valued more, $17,000 and some odd dollars more than an almost identical property in our same neighborhood. So if we have a neighbor that has the same floor plan, same builder, same approximate age, same neighborhood, and according to the county, their property is worth $17,000 less than ours. The only difference between that and in the packet of documents that I provided, ours is marked AA, theirs is the BB. And theirs is assessed at $294,200, and ours is a $311,800. The only difference between the two properties is they have a two-car garage, we have a three-car garage. However, they have a larger lot, they have a better-shaped lot, they have a rectangular shape, which to me is more usable. We have a wedge-shaped lot. Mm-hmm. We are back up against Road 68, which they are not. They have a larger shop. And their shop is also finished. I know for a fact they have power to it. They may have water, heat. So I think, yes, we have a larger garage, but when you factor in that we have a smaller shop, we have a smaller lot, we have a much, much, much less desirable location in our lot, and there's improvements that need to be made to our property. I don't understand why our property is valued at $311,800, and that comparable property is at $294,000. I propose what would be acceptable to me is we use that same value of our neighbor's property as a starting point and adjust it in a negative direction from there due to the fact that we are up against Road 68 and there are improvements that need to be made to our property.
Okay, we have to move on.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, I'm
going
to go ahead and start with page one. Just a quick overview of the property. Land is being valued at $66,000, improvement $245,800 for a total of $311,800. Address is 6713 Silvercrest Court in Pasco. Land size is about a half acre. It is zoned residential suburban. Single family residence, split level home, 592 square feet on the main floor, 704 on the lower, 772 upper. We have a 768 square feet attached garage, three bedroom, two bath, 1,040 square feet home building. It was last sold for 260 or purchased for 263,000 in 2016. Mm-hmm. Page two will show you the adjustments that we put on the property, 20% on land and none on the improvements. And then you'll see the characteristics on the home on page three. And moving to page five is the photo of the house. And six is the photo room that he has. And page seven is the sketch of the house. And page eight is our appraisal methodology. I just want to highlight again that state law requires us to assess property at 100% of its true and fair market value. Then page 10, we have the neighborhood description. Page 11 is our statistical summary report. This one shows our overall average ratios at 95.37%. And if you look at the split level alone, it's at 84%. So we're a little low on that. And the next few pages shows all the sales in that in Mr. Alexander's neighborhood. Page 14 has some ratio map, shows all the sales in that neighborhood and what the ratios are. And the last page, page 15, the first section shows this neighborhood, the split level homes built by the same builder, the parcel number, the lot size, area, and what we have it assessed at. So the first one would be Mr. Alexander's property, $311,800, and the rest, the other three that are built by the same builder and what we have it assessed at. The next one shows the sales in the split level home sales in 2017 and the quality, condition, and what we have the sales price at and what the ratios at. So we have 80%, 84, 95, 86. And as with what Mr. Alexander was saying, the sales that he has for Exhibit A through E, those are 2018 sales, and it's not used in our current sales pool for the 2019 taxes. So 2018 sales aren't used for our 2020 taxes. So if the market indicates that, you know, these sales are higher than what we are assessing at, this is the year that we make the market adjustment to adjust it to market value. The photos that he provided for Exhibit AA, those are normal wear and tear for exterior, siding, roofing. Exhibit BB, when he's comparing his with the other house in his neighborhood, it is a smaller attached garage. The whole building is older, so there's more depreciation in that. And right now, for the lot being, what the lot's being valued at is being valued as a lot, not the size of the lot in that neighborhood right now. So.
Sorry. Okay. Anything else?
Let's see here. Yeah, so for the exhibit F through G, where he has the data on the traffic count and speed, the market does not recognize this as a factor right now from what we see in our statistics and our analysis. It does not recognize that as a factor for us to reduce value or do any type of adjustments to the properties in the neighborhood.
Page 14. Where is this, the map? Where is the subject house?
Let's see here. So he's from.
Might be easier for him, actually.
So it's right here, yeah. So it's Road 67 and 68 between Pearl and Warnett.
Oh, right. Okay.
One of those.
Is it the middle cul-de-sac?
Yeah.
Okay.
The wedge.
The wedge that backs up on Road 68?
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's what I thought.
Is this Road 68 right here?
This is Road
68. Yeah. Right. So which one are we talking about? That one? Well, where's the house? It's right here?
That's the one.
Any other questions?
No, I'm good.
Joe?
No, I don't think I have any questions. Well, just one thing. There was maybe on your cover letter you mentioned Franklin County has increased the assessed value of our home from $238,900 to $311,800. Where did that number?
When we purchased the house, that's where it was at, I believe 2.5 years ago.
That was the purchase price.
No,
that was what it was assessed for.
That was what it was assessed at.
Yeah.
Okay.
2.5 years ago,
okay.
We purchased.
Okay.
Is that on the guy? We don't have that.
Being on AA, should be through that information.
And basically, all of your, like on B and A, those are all 2018 sales.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But Joe.
And they're less than the assessed value. So to me, the county is overcharging people in their taxes.
I All right. All right.
Okay. Anything else?
As Joe and Joe, it is on his...
What page are you on?
It's under his AA.
Under his AA.
That's what I'm trying to find. It's not showing up.
And it's on page 2 of AA.
Okay.
Keep going, just one or two more. Right there. And it's now on the other page, second line down, 2016.
Okay. Yep.
That's your number.
Okay, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you very much.
Well, can I respond to a couple things?
We are out of time.
Well, he's got a minute.
Yeah, 1 minute, okay.
Okay.
So the county did say it sounds like you're comparing sales of our property to other sales in the neighborhood. And I'd just mm-hmm. like to explain that there's two parts of our neighborhood. Our the part that we're in is much older than a newer part. I'm just concerned that maybe they're comparing sales to the much newer homes that are selling for $500,000 down the street. But they're different homes, different builder, and much newer. So if that's being taken into consideration, I don't agree with that because we're not comparing apples to apples. And also, I don't believe that the county has taken into consideration our location, which common sense will tell you that location plays a big, big part in the value of a property. If you're up against a busy street, that's going to detract a lot of buyers, and it's going to warrant a decrease in the value of a property. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
This includes petition BE 201-8-25, parcel 185-920-70, owners Joseph and others Alexander. It is 9:42. The next petition will be BE 2018-26, parcel number 1181-52190. Kent and Jane McMullen are the owners. Both are present at this time. Representing the assessor's office will be Finney Ho and Nikki Morgan. First of all, I want to let you know that the petition is scheduled for 20 minutes, and the appellant will have 5 minutes to get the highlights on the evidence. The evidence has already been presented to the board. At the same time, then the appraisers will have the next five minutes to present their evidence, and then we'll have 10 minutes for rebuttal and questions. Okay? And Linda.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. McMillan, and welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joe Christ, and me, Linda Mays, as chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity will be at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. You will now present your case first, and then the assessor will present their case. So please begin with your presentation.
Press this button.
No, you should be able to just type.
Of course, we're talking about the parcel at 3108 Tuscany Drive, which is our residence. This property we have owned since 2011. We moved in and gained occupancy in May of 2011 as a brand new building. Throughout this process, I do not contest the methodologies that are being used to determine the assessed values, but there is a fly in the ointment of the three methodologies, and that is this. We are adjacent to a neighboring property, which of course is not used as part of, as a commensurate property for tax assessment, and none of these three methodologies weigh any favor towards disparate properties that are side by side. You could live on an equivalent property equivalent to the Love Canal as a Superfund hazardous waste site in New York City, and this methodology would not change the assessment of a property because they look at other properties. We have a property at 9125 Argent Drive, who is our neighbors, of Argent Road, who are our neighbors, and it is akin to a Noah's Ark without the ark and without the floods. The Code Enforcement Board has been negligent time and again in enforcing violations of animal units, of conditions, and have drugged their feet throughout the whole process. Our neighbors have complained, we have complained, we have sent a written letter to Rick White with no response. The manure created by this overbearing number of animals on this property is never cleaned up. Rotten fruit and produce is thrown out on the property continuously. They scrounge whatever feeds they can come up with for the animals. And the property owner carried through on a threat that she made to neighbors that if they didn't quit complaining about their animals, she would bring in hogs. She did that. And we now have 4 to 5 adult hogs weighing in the 500-pound range, ranging the property. It's approximately 1.15 acres all total. I think maybe 3/4 of an acre in actual use for pasture. And the house is the rest of the footprint. There are goats, there are sheep, there are ducks, there are hogs. There were horses earlier. The hogs have uprooted the pasture of the property to where it is nothing but a 3/4 acre hog wallow. You can't find a plant growing anywhere except for the weeds at the perimeters of the fences of the property, and sucker trees that are coming up out of control. Nothing is ever sprayed or taken care of whatsoever. So, lucky us, we are to the east of the property, and the prevailing winds are from the southwest. So our back patio has been rendered useless for entertaining guests or for our own use because of the fly problem, because of the stench of the hogs and other animals. These property owners also put up temporary and illegal structures covered with bisqueen to hide their breeding operation that goes on and the litters and various progeny that they grow from the farm livestock. They're running a business without a business permit. They advertise on their Facebook site and sell animals. The woman that is there and her husband is an electrician. She is a 4-H leader. I have farmed for 35 years. I had 500 head of cattle. I had up to 500 head of hogs in my earlier years. I'm well versed and I have a degree in agriculture from Washington State University. This qualifies as anything but animal husbandry.
Excuse me, we need to move on.
Okay, so my point is that this property, we had our property up for sale and we actually moved off of our property for a little over a year. And we put it up through a realtor. We had two people look at the property. They loved the house, loved our property, looked across the fence, and that was the end of it. No offers made whatsoever.
So, Mr. Alexander, we need to move on to the assessors. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. Start with page one. We have land at $69,000, the improvement $381,600 for a total of $450,600. Land size is about 20,000 square feet. It is zoned residential suburban. It is a one-story single-family residence, 2,359 square feet, 488 square feet bonus room finished, 1,035 square feet attached garage, 63 square feet front covered porch, 280 square feet back covered porch, three bedrooms and three bathrooms. Go ahead and go to page two. This shows the adjustments that was made to the home, the property. So 20% on land and no adjustments on the improvements. The next page three and four shows the characteristics of the home. Page five is the photo of the home. Six would be the sketch, and seven again the Franklin County appraisal methodology. And I want to highlight that state law requires that we appraise property at 100% of its true and fair market value. Page 9 would be the description of the neighborhood. Page 10 is our statistical summary report, and you can see here our average ratio, which is the assessed value over the sales price, is 95.37% for the whole neighborhood, and for a one-story we're at 96.25. Next few pages you'll see the all the sales in Mr. and Mrs. McMullen's neighborhood. Page 13 would be the mass and the ratio of the sales in that neighborhood. And I'm going to go to page 14 real quick just to show you sale number one. This is right next door to Mr. and Mrs. McMullen's home, and it sold in June of 2017 for $580,000. Our ratio on it is at 89.2%. So if you go back to the map on page 13, right on Argent, and there's a red dot there, yeah, that's Mr. and Mrs. McMullen's home, and the house right next to them sold. And we are not at 100% ratio, we're at 89. So it sold for more than what we have it assessed at. For the issues that Mr. and Mrs. McMullen talked about their neighbor, those are for City of Pasco code enforcement. Mm-hmm. And right now, looking at the sale, and especially the sale next door to them, and even in that neighborhood, we're not seeing any indication that, you know, that we need to make any adjustments to the value. If we do, if sales in that neighborhood or sales just right up against that neighbor shows it's not being sold at market, we will make adjustments to meet market at 100%. So, but right now, as of right now, and what we did in our statistics and analysis, it does not indicate that, and it's not a factor.
I have a question on page three. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is wrong. Well, you've got on permit history, you've got an estimated value for the garage at $320,000.
This is for the whole house.
That's the whole house.
This is what the city gives you when somebody submit a permit to build a house. This is what the city. So, I mean, most of the time it's really not accurate, so.
I have a couple questions. Mr. McMullen, so you moved in 2011?
That is correct.
And I assume you were aware of the property behind yours, or to the west?
Yes, at that time it was not, didn't have near the animal numbers. It was a pasture. It was, has deteriorated from that time on.
Okay, that was my question next, was has it gotten worse?
Oh, much, much.
Okay, okay.
And I come from a farm background, so no, it originally did not bother me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a good point. Okay.
But the sale next door was just in June of 2017.
I realize that, and that was...
And I might add that that corner property only has a corner of the fence against the property. They really share... basically no perimeter fence with that property.
Any other questions?
I'm good.
Anything else? Any rebuttal?
Well, I don't, you know, when I look at on page 14, yes, you do have our next door neighbor who sold their house. One of the cell number two is down the street, and cell number three is several blocks away. But on the page 11 and 12, these homes are all over the Franklin County Assessor's Statistical Summary Report. I think that some of these homes aren't even near to us, but yet are taken into consideration in the value of coming up with the value of our home for tax purposes. And I feel that we are really in a unique situation. Yes, I agree that the Code Enforcement Board should be taking care of it. Do they? No, they don't. They're given this property next door is given extension after extension after extension, and now they've, you know, done something else so that they can hide what they're doing and continue what they're doing. They don't quit. They're not honest. The Code Enforcement Board, of course, cannot go on the property. So now they're hiding all their animals behind temporary structures. And I don't think that any of these homes listed here are in the same position that we're in.
Okay. We have numerous pictures, if you care, of our neighbor's property.
We have that information.
I might add that our perimeter fence for our homeowners association is being used for animal confinement, which is not what it was intended for. It's a vinyl perimeter fence around the whole homeowners association, and the hogs are allowed full access to it and are damaging the fence, rubbing against it, staining the fence, and rooting underneath it, causing yard collapses in places for some people's property into the hog pen because their property lies a little lower.
So you have a homeowners association.
Yeah.
Why can't they do something about this?
We have contacted the Code Enforcement Board, which fails to do a thing about the issue. So my next step is, if I get no resolution from the Code Enforcement Board, I'm documenting and documenting and documenting, and my next step will be legal representation against the Code Enforcement Board.
And they're well aware of this problem. I mean, this is a known property throughout the city.
Yeah. Anything else? Any questions for me? Thank you for coming in.
Okay, thank you for hearing us.
The time is 10 o'clock, and our next petition is BE 2018-27 for parcel 121-330-121, owners Brock and Tyra Wells. And Tyra Wells is here to represent for the parcel, also from the appraisals office for Brian Moneymaker and Nikki Morgan. This petition is scheduled for 20 minutes, and the appellant will have 5 minutes to present the highlights of our evidence. The board has already reviewed any evidence presented. Next, then the appraisers will have 5 minutes to highlight the points of their evidence as well that they provided. And then the next 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions. Okay?
Good morning, Mrs. Wells, and welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joel Crist, and me, Linda Mays, as chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity will be at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. You will present your case first, and then the assessor will present their case. So please continue. Please start with your presentation.
Thank you. And I really appreciate your time. The Office of the Commissioners has been really helpful, as have the assessors. I think I've talked to about everybody in the assessor's office, so I've tried to understand this process. I'm assuming you have the pictures and the letters that I wrote. So basically, as I compare the values of the properties that the assessor's office gave to me of recent sales, that they can establish our properties that assessed value on, I thought that there were several differences. Those properties were all closer to the Tri-Cities, therefore their value would be higher than ours. If they were built between 16 years to 57 years after ours was built, and therefore much newer. The quality of four of those homes was higher, the condition of all of those homes was higher, and as I compared those, I didn't think homes in that end of the county don't necessarily sell as often as homes on this end of the county, particularly the Pioneer homes, the family homes that are out there, that the original Pioneer, Basin Pioneers built. In my trying to figure out why the value had gone up so quickly, I talked to Peter in the assessor's office, and he said that 2 years ago when I had come in and appealed, that as the assessor's office looked at that, they did not think that the reduced value that the board had given us was reasonable, and then for that reason it was not considered in the subsequent years as the property was assessed. It was assessed as if that appeal had never taken place. He also explained to me that the properties, I think he was saying across the county, are increasing by 0.75% to 1% per month, which basically comes up to about 8% to 12% a year in value. And as I looked at ours, and because of the condition of our home, which you have the pictures of, and I figured those numbers out at the 8%, feeling that that was maybe even generous. And our home increased by 26%. So I felt like that was quite a bit more than what I was told properties across the board had been valued at. So as far as the land value goes, it really was bumped up almost by 10% in our case. And I started looking at some of the other land values that were close to our home. And I tried to do that with both names and addresses, and I wasn't always successful in finding the property I was looking for. But I did find 14 other properties that are close to ours, and was able to find those on the assessor's site. Out of those, four of those increased between the 2018 and 2019 assessment years. Nine of them stayed the same over the last 2 years, meaning the 2017 to the 2019, and two of them decreased between 2017 and 2018. And so I thought ours being increased as much as it was okay. Interesting.
We need to move on. Thank you, Ms. Moss. Go ahead.
All right, I first want to start off by, if you look at page 9 in my presentation, it's under the Franklin County Appraisal Methodology. The last paragraph on that page, the mass appraisal process does not use a sales comparison approach with direct comparable sales to establish value. It does not identify a set of comparable sales for each property, adjust them for differences, and use the results to establish the appraised value. So basically, we're different. Well, if you go on to the next page, actually, to page 10 and the last paragraph again. The goal of Franklin County Assessor is to achieve assessment equity in the largest number of properties. That is, the computed value approximates the sale price for the largest number of cases. Then such a model can be applied with confidence to unsold properties in the county. While this appraisal methodology differs considerably from a market approach fee type appraisal, it is similar in intent in that it utilizes market information to establish the value of subject properties. So that is how we base, just as a starting point, every single property in the whole county. Every county, every property has a blank slate. Regardless of if it was in a BOE or whatever, the value, we're looking at it as a blank slate, and then we look at the sales, and then we apply market adjustments so that we can be within these tolerances that you will see on page 12. And in this case, for neighborhood, It's 412, 413 for the north irrigation blocks. We're at 73.64% in our ratio across that whole area. So that is what we use as our basis. When I say we use a blank slate, we then apply our market adjustments based on these sales. And then come up with a value. We apply a market adjustment to every property that is the same. If you look at the sales that we do have, they're all close to the subject. The furthest one being 11 miles away. And if you look at the assessed value ratio, the AP ratio, we have for the ones I would say older properties, older homes, 40 years or more. We have Russell Road is actually 1.6 miles away. It was built in 1933, and we're at 66% on that property.
So that number, 1906, is
the year built. 1906 is the year built on that first on that, and it's the third sale, Russell Road. Third sale.
Okay.
1333.
So it's over 100 years old.
It's over 100 years old. But it sold for $210,000. If you look at the next one down, that's up the West Road, that's 11 miles away, it's a little bit further. It sold for $275,000, and we're at 74% on our value. And it's actually much smaller than than the subject. The subject has 2,200 square feet upper and just a little under 900 square feet in the basement finished. The basement is 1,000 square feet or 1,100 square feet, and only less than 900 of it is finished, but it's still finished. area, livable area. Chestnut Road, it's 2 miles away, 2.87 miles away, built 1959, sold for $249.9 million. And it is much smaller, yet again, it's only 1,600 square feet, 1656. Ironwood Lane, the next one down, 2.87 miles. It's closer in size, in the fact that it's 2,000 square feet, or 2,100. Whereas the subject, is, again, is closer to that 3,000 finished square footage. But yet again, we were at 57% on that sale. And the same thing with the last one, the Kent Way. We're at 76.98%. Well, it's actually a two-story. So, or it's a two-story and it's 2016. So, but we use those sales when we're looking at a market out there, especially when we have a little sales. These are rural properties. We're not gonna have the most sales, and in a tight supply market, you're not gonna have as many sales as you would like. But we can.
We probably need to go on.
Okay,
all right. Any questions, rebuttals on this?
I think Brian knows the market. I don't question the assessor's good intent. They have been very helpful as I called, and I just felt like our value increased significantly. My concerns were that if the board reduced my value 2 years ago, and yet that could be overlooked in any subsequent years, I guess I question, are we spending our time well being here, any of us, if it doesn't really matter?
So we are an annual county, and values are set every year. That's why you have the right to appeal every year. So if the market is moving up and we're increasing everyone else's value, if yours stays stagnant, a board decision in a prior year can't freeze your value, whether it be land or improvements going forward. The market continues to move and fluctuate. So if we left yours, then that would be shifting that tax burden onto all the other taxpayers in the county. So part of our role is to value property, and part of our role is to value property equitably for all. So when we see that the market is continuing to trend up and our ratios are continuing to move down, we can't justify leaving yours even lower. We're going to move them all up together.
Yes, but as I did look through mm-hmm. the assessor's records, there were several that stayed the same. And I wasn't asking that mine didn't move at all. I think with the papers that I submitted, I did say, tried to go with the 8% increase. But it wasn't 8% from what the board had set. It was 8% from what, the assessor's value had assessed.
It's a new market value altogether.
And so I felt like that was questionable. Nikki just said something else. Let me think if I can remember what it was. Can't. I'm not trying to point fingers at anyone, as I think they're doing what they are legally bound to do, what they believe they're doing. I felt like previous board decision had not been taken into consideration, and I did see a lot of values, particularly those land values that I mentioned, 9 out of 14 had moved, had stayed the same, and a couple had been decreased. And there were things I didn't understand. I didn't understand when I would come upon one that was said exempt or something, so I didn't include that.
I have one thing about that. As far as the land values, I think I need to explain what might be.
That's
right,
next.
Yeah.
They're early.
I think I understand what the issue was, is that it's, you might have been looking at current use values. Current use land values didn't move. That's what they're going to pay taxes on, that value, similar to yours.
I was looking at assessed values.
And
excuse
that is,
me one second.
Can you call back in about 4 minutes, please?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Brian, I had one question for you.
Yeah.
I know in your report you go through a replacement cost review using the information in Marshall's room.
Yes.
There's a, it talks about physical depreciation of 25%.
Page, are you on page
I'm on page
4. I'm sorry, page
4. Page 4, okay.
Yeah. Is that a value that is chosen off of a table, or is that something that is part of the software, or how does that work?
It's through the software, and it takes into account year built, quality, and condition.
Okay.
And something to note there, that's from the original year built, and I'm not sure if it's noted in the packet, but a significant amount of the square footage on this home was built in the 70s, so it's much newer portion. So okay. That depreciation is from the original year built. It doesn't take into consideration that a lot of the home is much newer, so it's okay. Still being depreciated as if it were older.
Okay.
Mrs. Wells, I do have a question. Have you had the appraisers come out and physically go through your home with you?
Yes, 2 years ago, both Nikki and Finney came out.
Okay.
We're very polite, went through the whole home, went around the property. This year, Shirley suggested that perhaps that might be a good thing to do again, having, you know, 2 more years where, and you saw the pictures, and
right.
When I called to invite them out, I really think they were pressed for time. I think they were very busy, and Nikki politely just said that she didn't think it would change.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Any more questions?
No.
Good. Thanks for coming in, Mrs. Wells.
Thank you.
Shirley. Okay, it is 10:22, and we will begin with petition BE2018-28 for parcel 11546042. This is for Pasco Lodging LLC doing business at Sleep in Pasco. We have Jeffrey Marks represented by tax advisors representing Pasco Lodging by phone conference. And what we will do is we will cover those things informationally wise at the beginning of this petition, and then we will not repeat it except to say that petition is concluded when we go into the next for Tri-Cities retirement. Does that make sense, Mr. Marks?
Yes, it does.
Okay, excellent. All right, so for petition BE2018-28, we have then Jeffrey Marks representing Pasco Lodging, and we have Nikki Morgan representing the assessor's office. This petition is scheduled for 30 minutes, and the appellant and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of evidence they have provided. That evidence has been provided to the board, and they have reviewed it. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions.
Okay.
And Linda Mays is our chairman, and she will speak next.
Good morning, Mr. Marks, and welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joel Christ, and me, Linda Mays, is chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. This hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. This decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity will be at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. You will present your case first, and then the assessor will present her case. So please begin with the presentation of your case.
Thank you. I would like to thank the board for your time this morning. I just wanted to briefly introduce myself. Obviously, you know my name is Jeffrey Marks. I have approximately 27 years of appraisal-based experience. That experience is in both private and public sector. So I understand fully the process undertaken in the assessor's office on these properties as well. For the Sleepy in Pasco, this property was built in 1997. It's located, as most of you know, at the intersection of I-182 and Broadmoor Boulevard. It's the only hotel in this location. At the time it was built, there was speculation that this would be the prominent intersection. That didn't happen, as we all can tell. The development occurs 2 miles down the freeway to the east at Road 68. So our hotel is a limited service hotel with a breakfast feature and no other real traveler-friendly amenities within a reasonable walking distance. We looked at the hotel's income and we looked at 5 years of historical data, which is there in your packet on page P1-5. The first five columns are historical for 2013 through 2017. The boxed column looks at the 5-year averages. And then we capitalized the 2017 actuals and made adjustments where necessary to avoid what single year anomalies in any given category. And so that last column is that math and how it works out. We looked at a capitalization rate unloaded at 9.4, and that was based off what we can see from CoStar and other sources in the area. We added a tax rate, we added the 2017 rate, which is the last known rate at the valuation date, and we added 1.22, so we capitalized our income at 10.62, which results in the value at $2.95 million. Then subtracted the known business personal property value of $57,180, which results in the $2,892,800 you see there on that page. Then on page P1-6, we looked at the sales that were available in the market, of which four of these, the assessor also presented in our packet. The biggest difference in the sales is that hotel buyers look at regional and national factors, not just a particular locale, and they look at similar branding or HDS scaling, as they call it, in the hotels. We believe it's very prudent to consider any sales of the similar brand being the Sleep Inn. Since we've included comparables 2 and 4, knowing full well they're not located in the Tri-Cities area. When we look at the sales, we looked at sale number 6 and 7, which is the Red Lion, and we find this property to be about a decade newer than the subject. The rooms are larger on a per square foot basis, and information available indicates that the net ordinary income per room on this property is approximately three times what the assessment would generate on the subject. So after looking at that, we would consider that sale to be somewhat superior to the subject property. We then looked at sale number one, again looking at it, the NOI per limit to that number, actually, the NOI per limit is about the same but less than the assessed value on the subject. This is a motel type property. And the rooms are smaller on a per square foot basis. We really think this property is inferior. So that would leave us with the four sales being 2, 3, 4, and 5. The two sleep-in sales bracket what a sleep-in property should sell for in the Pacific Northwest region. Sale number 4 is in the Greater Portland metropolitan area. I think we all can agree that that's probably superior to the Tri-Cities area. This would set the high end in the market for this brand. Sale number 2 is located in Roseburg, Oregon. Then I think we can agree that's probably an inferior market to the Tri-Cities. So that would be just the subject fit should fit theoretically between those two properties. And when we look into the Tri-Cities local area, sale number 3, which is the guest house inn and suites in Kennewick, is basically the same age. It does have a slightly larger square foot per room. But when we look at the NOI per room, or the net operating income per room, ordinary income per room, it's at about $5,421 per room. At our cost approach, our income approach, when we look back on T1-5, and we've capitalized 2017 with the industry adjustments for the area, we're at $5,056 per room. That's the furthest column on the right. And down in the bottom, in the bottom dark line, you'll see that number. We think that this is a pretty comparable property. And basically, when you take this sale price on number 3, on a price per room basis, it sold at $46,897 per room. If you multiply that by the 62 rooms as a subject, the subject would have about $2,901,907 for a value. We think sale number 3 is pretty reflective of the subject property and the market there. And our subject has been suffering with its isolation. We see that this year in the drop of the average daily rate the owners are able to collect on the room. Over the last 2 years, it stayed stable and then drops this year by about $7 per room in the daily rate. Actually, I apologize. It drops by about $10 per room in daily average rate from 16 to 17. And you can see that again on page P1-5. In the top section there, it's the second line down below the room counts. And you'll see in 16 it was $89.11, and in 17 it's $79.21. So we think the actuals carry weight when we look at this true and fair market value. Speaks to the specific property, not the general, it speaks to the general idea of what a prudent buyer would have, but the specifics of the property would weigh on an investor's decision in this, and to consider willing to pay the assessed value on this property when we see similar properties selling for less very few buyers who take that gamble.
Okay, Mr. Marks, this is Linda Mesa. We need to move on to the assessor's comments.
Yes, that's fine. That's the end of what I have.
Okay, good.
All right, thank you. This is Nikki. And I am going to start in on page one, just an overview. The Sleep Inn is a limited service hotel built in 1997. It's 20,220 square feet. Average quality, average condition. It has an indoor swimming pool, business center, and meeting room. I'm going to go ahead to page 4 or 5. This is an overview of the characteristics of the property using a Marshall and Swift cost approach, cost-less depreciation. And then we do use a market-adjusted cost approach when necessary. So we'll get into that when we look at the sales. Page 7 is the sketch of the property and 8 is the photo. 9 gives you the geographical location, Broadmoor and the freeway right on the corner. It is the only hotel in the area of Broadmoor and Road 100, which also means there's no competition out there. Page 10 is the commercial land ratio, just showing that our median ratio is 96% on commercial land to sales prices. Page 11 are vacant land sales. I don't think there was any question on land, but the average price per square foot that they're selling for is $5.78. We have the subject valued at $5. Page 12 is a map of the land sales used. Subject indicated in the top left. Page 13 is the commercial approved ratio. So these are parcels not vacant land, but parcels that are approved with buildings and other improvements, showing that our median ratio for this area is 94% of recent selling prices. Page 14 are the comparable sales. So there are some of the similar sales that were used in the appellant's packet. We really only felt that the ones in, located in the Tri-Cities were relevant, so you have them there. The bottom of the page, we like to note the fact that there have been significant hotel improvements to the area. It may be the only hotel at Road 100, but there are many more coming into the Tri-Cities. The Tri-Cities population growth and the economic boom has brought in many more. If the hotel industry was suffering here, that would not be the case. And they're continuing to build more. Page 15 and 16 just give you a better idea of the specific sales comps that were used. The subject is the first parcel. And then I'd like to note sale 2 while we're here at this page. This is the Roadway Inn on Oregon near US 12 in Pasco, and that it sold for $2.2 million in 2015. I'd like to note that on the appeal, the appellant is asking for the assessed value to be $2.3 million, and just note the difference in location, the brand, the area, the different income that this property could realize under a normal management situation should be much higher than the Roadway Inn on Road 100. Yet they're asking for the value to be pretty close to what it sold for a few years ago. The rest of the sales on page 16. Pages 17 and 18, there's a lot of meat here. I'm not going to read it, but I really hope that you have. This dissects all of the issues that come about. The first paragraph, the first paragraph under the WAC, there is an underlying part that says net income that is reasonable. So the whole crux of our argument compared to the appellant's packet is that higher expenses and lower income, higher vacancies, those in a situation in a hotel where there's no outside influences, is a management decision. So is it being mismanaged? I'm not sure. But when we look at the income and expense questionnaires of similar properties in the Tri-Cities, the income is higher, the vacancies are lower, the expenses are much lower. So when we use our income approach, we don't put as much weight on their actuals as we do to others that are within the normal range of market. This is way out of the range. The vacancy is so much higher. It's double in some cases than what we feel it should be. And the expenses are higher as well. So it didn't fall, it hasn't in the past years of appeal. The numbers that they're providing is not falling within the typical range of what we would expect for a hotel in the Tri-Cities. So that, at some point, is a management decision. And so we are going to look at the net income that is reasonable for the property and use market expenses, market vacancies, market cap to find out what the market value is, rather than looking at its actuals and maybe what they would like to pay taxes on. The income approach is on page 19. Again, it looks different from the other income approaches that we've been giving this year, just because we wanted to drive multiple specific properties on here at a time, showing that the occupancy rates that we use is 65%. The Roadway Inn reported to us that they were at 50 when they sold, and the Sleep Inn is saying that it's 48. It's more reflective of the Roadway Inn on Road 100, not something you'd expect from something out of Broadmoor. Again, and then the expenses for similar properties, right, at 65%, but the expenses that the Sleep Inn is reporting is 73.9, very comparable to the Roadway Inn. The last thing I'd like to note is that the sales price from 2002, and this is on page 18, so the subject property sold in 2002 for $2.7 million, and we're saying that over a decade later, in the market that Pasco has seen, they're saying that they would like the resale value to be right at that sales price from 2002. It just doesn't make market sense for the growth that we've had.
Okay, any rebuttal?
Well, yes, ma'am. I would like to draw the board's attention to page P1-2 of our packet, and you will see that our original appeal is submitted with the value that Ms. Morgan referenced there at $2,363,100. We actually are revising that, acknowledging that there was some erroneous data in our report, and we're asking for $2,892,800, much more reflective of the market for us. The other item I would point out is that the 48.1 occupancy rate that is mentioned on assessor's page 19 for the hotel, I'm not sure where that came from other than perhaps last year's rate. Again, on P1-5 under actual in 2017, so it'll be the column closest to the box, you'll see the top line below 62 rooms. That actually says our occupancy was at 68.8% for 2017. That increase is a direct result of the relationship of our property needing to lower their average daily rate by $10 to increase their occupancy. This is a delicate balancing act for hotels to maintain high daily rate and high occupancy. Something has to give in the process.
Yes, my report was prepared before we had the appellant's packet for this year.
Okay.
And then Mrs. Morgan references additional competition coming into the area, and that is a given. We acknowledge that. That is seen in our hotel struggling with occupancy as more choices are there and available, and closer to complimentary services, travelers are going to choose those, and travelers will choose a new hotel over an older hotel, usually. So we see that in the three prior years. We see 17 as being much more reflective of what's going on at the hotel as the competition is stabilizing out.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board? Joe?
No, I don't.
I don't think she did. Did you have anything else?
Okay, this includes petition BE 2018-28 for 1154600042. Pasco Lodging LLC, I'm sorry, Pasco Lodging LLC doing business at City of Pasco. What we will do, Mr. Marks, at this time is we will proceed to petition BE 2018-29 for parcel 1192. 90055. This is Tri-Cities Retirement LLC. Again, Mr. Marks from Tax Advisors representing. And Nikki Morgan is here to represent the assessor's office. Same time limits. Again, Mr. Marks, you will have 10 minutes. And then Ms. Morgan will have 10 minutes from the assessor's office. And then we will have 10 minutes for rebuttal and questions.
Okay. Is the board ready?
Yes, we are. Go ahead.
Okay. So I will start on page P1-2. Again, I will start at the top of the form here and ask the board to note the fact that we have revised our recommended value from $2 million to $3.841,500. This is a senior housing property. The care and service amenities are a business intrinsic portion of this. And the residents pay fees to reside there, which incorporates and includes those care and service amenities, several of which are listed there on the bottom of P1-2. In this case, because of the business operation there, it's very difficult to capitalize any income without that income being directly impacted by the business value. So neither side looked at using an income approach. We have looked at the cost approach on the property to highlight the value of the real estate only. The cost approach looks at building a virtual copy of the property, and I would call the board's attention to the box on P1-3. So, in the middle there, when we look at this, RCN stands for replacement cost middle, and we looked at the cost approach from both our side and the assessor, and you'll see those numbers there. You'll note that our replacement cost new is higher than the assessor's, and the depreciation numbers are different, which is the crux of the problem in this case. By assigning only 25% depreciation to the property as the assessor does, there's not enough loss being accounted for. This would be loss, this would be the typical wear and tear that the building experiences simply by having been built. Any wear and tear residents may cause by accident or intentionally, it accounts for the outdated mechanical systems, that sort of thing. So on page P1-7, you will see a chart from the Marshall and Swift book, which shows you that in the first column, or in the first box there on the very left, the age on this, the property is approximately 43 years old, so you'll see that highlighted, and in average condition, it should be approximately 38 years old in terms of effective age. So when you look on page P1-8, and you go to 36, I highlighted the wrong line, I apologize, you will see that in a 50-year life, that depreciation should be about 48%, which is a number we utilize in our calculation there. Then we add the site value, which would be asphalt, that sort of thing. The land value, and we arrive at that $3,841,500 figure. In looking at sales, again, the business value is wrapped up in these when they sell, usually. And it's very common for them to sell in portfolios or bulks of properties together. So on the assessor's three sales that they provided, sale number one and sale number two sold together as part of a four property bulk transfer. The other two properties were not located in the Tri-Cities area. That the numbers that we see there are allocations that we have no knowledge what the algorithm for allocation methodology was, so that would make them suspect. They also both included the business value, which was reduced or was subtracted from the sale prices. And sale three is a skilled nursing facility. These are very different product types. And they have different costs and very different operational methodologies and expenses. So, in our humble opinion, we believe that the cost approach should be the predominant factor. When you look at ours, you'll see that we started at a higher point. We've applied depreciation accordingly. And the value of $3.84 million should be the value in use on the property. And that's what I have.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead, Vicki.
Okay, you guys have my report. It's very similar. Like you said, our cost approaches are almost identical, other than the depreciation. And our depreciation difference is just due to the fact that we are here locally. We've inspected the property, and we will put the depreciation on there according to what we see when we get it. So if it had the normal wear and tear and deferred maintenance of a typical 36-year-old building, then it may have been closer to the 48% depreciation. But if they have taken care of that, there is no deferred maintenance, if they're performing the maintenance and keeping up with it as it should be, then the depreciation is going to be less because the age of that building then becomes less significant to its overall condition. I will note that the sales included, I'm just going to skip all the way to back to page 13 that he was referencing the sales that we included. I did include, I was only able to obtain two of the excise before the hearing. But when businesses sell, they don't want to have to pay excise tax on additional value that they don't have to. And they don't have to pay excise tax on personal property, that would be furniture and equipment, and they don't have to pay excise tax on intangible business value. So at that point, they deduct it. It would be noted on here with a reason for exemption and a value removed, just like they remove their personal property. So I'm looking down at the bottom right-hand part of the form under the document date.
What page are you on?
I'm sorry, 16.
Oh, okay.
So they have a gross selling price, and they've deducted their personal property. If there is business or intangible property, goodwill, any of that, they are to also remove that and not have to pay excise tax on it. So I just wanted to note that in either of these cases, did they remove any business note any business value being transacted? That's it.
And Nikki, was sale one and two bulk sales?
No, you can see on the excise form that they list the specific parcel number, including the legal description that is that land and that those buildings specifically.
Thank
you.
In
the deed transfers, they have to be very specific.
Okay.
I would suggest that the recording of the deed for each specific property would be done on an individual property basis. That does not mean that they sold individual of each other. The transaction between the parties was for four properties, again, two in the Tri-Cities area and two not, that's what they actually agreed on and transferred. They can't record a property in, say, Spokane County in the Tri-Cities. You couldn't record a property in Kennewick in Pasco.
Right.
So it's got to record in the individual county.
So that's what they did, and then they allocate the specific portion of that bulk sale to the specific property. That's what they have to pay excise tax on in that area. So what they're saying of that bulk sale, they're attributing a certain portion of that, and that would be the gross selling price listed for this specific parcel. We did not use the sales comparison approach to adjust. It's a cost approach, and the difference would be the depreciation, because we've been to the property and noted that there was not as much deferred maintenance as maybe what's typical for a building of this age.
Okay. Any questions?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Board, any questions from the board?
Mr. Marks, did you visit the property?
I have not physically been at this property.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Marks.
Thank you again for your time.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
This concludes petition E-018-29 for parcel 1192-90055, Tri-Cities Retirement LLC, representation by tax advisors, Mr. Jeffrey Marks. The time is 10:56. We will recess for deliberation for the hearings scheduled for today.
So that's Steve's cousin.
Yeah. Time is 12:22, and the board has made their decisions, and when the name's chairman, will define this.
Regarding BEE 2018-24, parcel number 114292141, taxpayers Perry and Carolyn Hobson, the board is sustaining the assessor's value of $299,100 for the following reasons. The decision of the board is based on information on sales of comparable properties, and the criterion for the board decisions is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value. The taxpayer, Mr. and Mrs. Hobson, did not appear for this hearing, and they were the reason for their petition was that they felt that their home is 42 years old and it's depreciating, not appreciating, especially not at $70,000 in a year. He says, I feel we pay a fair amount of taxes on the property valued as it is now. Regarding BE 2018-25, parcel number 118592070, taxpayer Joseph and Heather Alexander, the board is sustaining the assessor's value of $311,800. The reasons being, the decision of the board is based on information on sales of comparable properties, and the criterion for the board decisions is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value. For BE 2018-26, parcel number 118152190, taxpayer Kent and Jane McMullen, the board is sustaining the assessor's total of $450,600. The reason being, the decision of the board is based on information on sales of comparable properties, and the criterion for the board decisions is 100% of market value. A decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value. For BE 2018-27, parcel number 121-330-121, taxpayers Brock and Tyler Wells. The board is, our decision for the land value is $88,300. The improvement values we are adjusting to $183,591. The total value, assessed value, is $271,891. And the reason being, the decision of the board reflects a reduction in the value of the improvement due to deferred maintenance. And the decision of the board recognizes the cost to cure problems of the subject property. And lastly, the decision of the board recognizes that the location of the property affects its market value. For BE 2018-28, parcel number 115460042, for Pasco Lodging Sleep In, 9930 Bedford Street in Pasco. This was a conference call with Jeffrey Marks, and the board is sustaining the assessed value of $3,400,300, and the reason being, the criterion of the board decision is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value, and the decision of the board is based on an income analysis. And lastly, BE 2018-29, parcel number 119-290055, for Tri-Cities Retirement, located at 2000 North 22nd in Pasco. This was a conference call with Jeffrey Marks, and the board is sustaining the assessed value of $4,986,300. And the reasons being, the criterion for board decisions is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value, and the decision of the board is based on the estimated cost of construction less depreciation. This meeting is now adjourned.